Over the course of offering many, many Insight Dialogue retreats, I was frankly amazed at what I saw happening in terms of people's experiences, even in, you know, from the simple, in very short retreats, people were developing very strong mindfulness and some degree of concentration that was way out of proportion for the time spent. And in longer retreats, I would frequently, not just from time to time, get comments like, you know, I just did, you know, several months at the Forest Refuge and I had more insights here in a week. Or my concentration got deeper here than in the month long I just did. Stuff like that that really surprised me. And it happened a lot. And then on the side of transformations or insights or whatever word you want to use, people were having experiences of quite a deep nature of anatta, of deep letting go, of both at the in the aspect of, let's say, psychological formations that had plagued them, social anxiety that was actually being medicated, dropping away. You know, I mean, quite remarkable stuff. I kept thinking, oh, well, that must have been a special retreat. And then that one must have been, and that one must have been. And at some point I had to say, no, something's going on here that is unusual. And there have been some cases where a kind of power of the practice created difficulties for people as well. Far fewer than I expected, frankly, also. But, you know, sometimes people would, not people like, this has happened a lot, but it has happened that several times that people would decompensate, that they'd, you know, sort of lose their orientation and take some time to get it back. I'm not aware of any that did not. I am aware of only one that lasted a very long time, but I'm aware of several that were several days of difficulty. And when I first began to develop the practice, it was with a certain amount of fear that that kind of thing would happen a lot, because I knew that, just from my own experience, the bringing together of the sensitive mind of meditation retreat with anything would be powerful, but to bring it together with relationship was like, seemed like, I was not unaware that what I was doing was ridiculous, you know, that it was kind of audacious or perhaps risky. And I kept my eyes wide open and at my ear keenly to the ground of, you know, is there harm? And I felt enough confidence going forward. I didn't know why. I made up reasons, or I imputed reasons, like, well, you know, there's enough calming happening on the retreats that that the kind of the agitations that come up with breakthroughs are being well held, that the quality of love and compassion that naturally arises is holding a lot of these difficulties, things like this. To this day, there remain a lot of unanswered questions about all of this that I'm speaking of so far. But I did begin to discern what I believed were some useful patterns. And over a period of a few years, that began to coalesce into what I'm going to share with you now, which is the three bases of insight dialogue, the essential ingredients. And the way that those interact with each other and what happens, the synergy that happens when all three are together. And perhaps by understanding this, we can, you know, say, well, this is insight dialogue and this isn't, because it misses these elements. Or we can talk about training in all three of these, you know, aspects. And we can look at problems on a retreat or in a group or even in a community when one or the other of these bases is not strongly present. And they are, in short, the meditative qualities of the mind, the wisdom base or Dhamma, and relationship itself. And I'll say a little bit about, you know, the power, if you will, of each of them separately, and then talk about some of the overlaps and how they synergize, and then maybe we can sense, hopefully from some of our experience that we've had, how they come together. Something that everyone in this room is intimately familiar with is, let's just say, the power, the effectiveness of meditative qualities. And, you know, there's a lot of teachings that we've received and that we offer to others on the power of mindfulness, for example, in addition to in everyday life, in retreat, as mindfulness gets very steady, we see things that we don't usually see. And what we see can free us. It can be painful. The idea of mindfulness-based stress reduction is sort of like the opposite of a mindfulness retreat sometimes. And, you know, that's just true that sometimes we see stuff that's not easy to see, but that's the nature of the game. That's the, you know, part of coming to understanding. And we can say the same thing and probably double it when it comes to concentration. That concentration is a powerful factor by itself and is you know, one of the necessary conditions for liberating insight. And it can be scary, and if it's not taught with care, the development of samadhi can be, I'll say dangerous, and at least we can say difficult, fraught. And you put mindfulness and concentration together, sati and samadhi, you have the classic, you know, insight pair. But then you've got the rest of the factors of awakening. You've got the Dhamma Vijaya, you've got the virya, you know, the investigation, you've got the energy, you've got the tranquility, the equanimity, the rapture, the joy, and any number of other ways that we talk about meditative qualities. The point that binds them together in what I'm saying now is that by itself, meditation, developing meditative qualities, is a powerful force for freeing the mind. But let's also just say, it's strong stuff. That's the point. So, to talk about, you develop mindfulness and or some, you know, concentration, just by itself, something's going to happen. So let's go on from that model to Dhamma, to wisdom teachings. Some teachings are so powerful that even if you're not developing meditative qualities, even if you're not, let's say, a regular meditator, but you touch the Dhamma and you let it in, you try to really understand it and you don't hold it at arm's length, some teachings will remain outside because without meditation they're difficult to understand, but some teachings will go right through you, right into you, and change you. I know for myself that when I began to really understand not what I had been just taught about tanha, but when I really investigated it deeply and looked at bhava and looked at vibhava, it became a framework in my life where I could see them operating. And by seeing them operating, I began to get less hooked by the forces, by that of that thirsting. Just from the wisdom teachings, not because I was in retreat or any such thing. And we can say the same, can't we, about a reflection on death or the, you know, really contemplating impermanence deeply without meditation. That's what I'm saying. Just the wisdom itself can change us, change me, change you. And so recognizing, if you will, the power of that, the power of wisdom, the power of, and when I say wisdom, what I mean is Buddha Dhamma, early Buddhist teachings. And the third base is relationship itself. Now, whereas the meditative qualities have a built-in framework of wholesomeness, they can be misapplied for sure, but they have a built-in framework of wholesomeness, and so does the Dhamma. Relationship can definitely go to the bright side or the dark side, and the power of relationship manifests in both ways. The power of love and the power of hatred is the easiest thing to say. Where let's say, a relationship with one other person who really receives me as I am changed by that. And the power of my being with someone who's very hateful and being drawn into that hatred, or moving against that hatred and hatred against hatred building, is a good example of the dark side, if you will. But what's happening there, the basic relational dynamic of amplifying between us our hatred, or amplifying between us our compassion and our love. So it's that between, and as it's a larger group, it has a different dynamic, but the same basic reflective process, and the background of this is goes back to the origins of our species and the evolution of the social organism, the brain, the body, the whole hormonal system. And that sensitivity in this amplifying, in this mirroring, without any meditative qualities, without any Dhamma, is a strong force in everyone's life. Relationship is not optional. Meditation is. So I was looking at what was happening in the when any of these three bases pairs up with another one. Some of them are classic. The one that would be most familiar to us here is the meditative qualities and the Dhamma. So here we're talking about, you know, the role, let's say, of the Dhamma talk on a meditation retreat, for example, or the role of studying the Dhamma and its and having that supported by meditative insight and how that can change us. So we see that together, let's say, with the Buddha Dhamma, the wisdom piece sometimes points the way, gives a practice guidance, or sometimes the brightening, the refinement of the mind in meditation gives us a way of understanding the wisdom teachings that we wouldn't have access to otherwise. We can actually get closer to the truth of impermanence, not just read about it or something. We can get closer to the, you know, to the nature of clinging, of upadana, and how that relates, how that's driven by tanha. Things like that become more clear to us. And that's very powerful, those two things working together. And we can also look at, let's say, just the wisdom piece and the relationship piece and how they overlap. So here we're talking about the power of spiritual friendship in cultivating some understanding so that, for example, we have, again, skip the meditative qualities, we just have a discussion, a true heartfelt discussion, authentic, and we bring our minds to it, we bring our hearts to it, and it could be about, well, superiority conceit without meditative qualities, or it could be about something like aging, illness, death, could be about relinquishment, could be about intention, could be about right speech itself, could be about meditative qualities, but not meditating. But together, we will discover things that alone we might never find. And by being with you in the conversation, I get your perspective. I'm not limited, so I have an immediate doubling, if you will, of the intellectual power. I have a doubling of experience, and the more diverse that group, the more breadth I get in unpacking the wisdom teachings from broad perspectives. So relationship plus wisdom is strong stuff, even without meditation. Relationship with meditative qualities is one of the things that I was seeing that gradually, you know, I began to understand something. I don't claim to fully understand, but I began to understand something of why that's such a powerful pair. What's going on? As per your question, why when two people come together does the sati get so strong so quickly? What is that? You know, when you're paying attention and I'm paying attention, and just the fact that I'm here means you're not going to wander around so much because it's rude, or because I'm interesting and you're interesting, or because this is better than something that's out there. But also there's the sheer reflective process of your being aware or practicing mindfulness is reminding me to continue practicing mindfulness just by being there. You don't have to say, Greg, are you mindful? Just being there, your body, your mind, your attention says that to me, and mine says it to you. And then between the two of us, that stabilizes. And to my great surprise, an unexpected degree of pasadi and samadhi, of tranquility and calm concentration, was evolving on these retreats that, frankly, I wouldn't say I refused, I resisted even calling it concentration, because I had this respect for a traditional understanding of samadhi in silent personal meditation. So I didn't want to pollute my understanding. So years and years I didn't call it that, but it finally got to, it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, it must be a duck. And I think it's a duck, I don't want to overclaim or overstate, because it's only a matter of all of us in the community discovering what this is. But I'm just sharing with you that the steadying of the mind and the resting that happens on either the contemplation or on the field itself, the relational field itself, or resting with the awareness of the body with another stabilized. And it's not just the reflecting process. There's so much about this that nobody understands. I'm one of those people that does not understand. But, there are other factors. The aspect of kind of the way human beings regulate each other is at work. And the safety that can be provided by a listening ear, and the joy that comes with that, and the calming down with, I'm being seen. So it's not that there's no tanha. It's just that the tanha is kind of taking a rest, because it's being got a steady, IV drip of some being with someone, But then something can begin to let go. So between just the meditative qualities and relationship, there's this power, this amplifying power, accelerating power, is why things might happen so quickly in a couple of days of Insight Dialogue retreat. So now we come to where all three of these meet and synergize. So you have in Insight Dialogue this amplifying, accelerating power of relationship, the way it supports and brightens mindfulness, the way it steadies the tranquility, the concentration, the way it arouses persistence and energy in practice, consistency of practice. And you have now also the brightening of the relational quality itself, meaning as the body-mind calms down, there's a kind of a frequently, I would say, it seems to be a natural part of the process, that with that calming down, there's a dropping of the barriers in, let's say, the safety and in the intimacy that's not a constructed intimacy, and that quality of metta and karuna, the Brahma-viharas, just naturally manifest as a living experience. So into this field, into this human situation that's bright with awareness and stabilized, the seed of the Dhamma is planted. And the Dhamma, in this case, I want to say leaps or migrates or transforms from concept to felt experience. And this transmutation of Dhamma from concept into experience has become one of the hallmarks of the practice that I've noticed at these retreats I teach, in the groups, in the online groups. It doesn't have to be a long retreat, because the practice is based on these three bases that I'm talking about. And I have this feeling that the Dhamma coming alive is one of the real contributions that this makes. I know that it has the possibly obvious insight dialogue, possibly obvious benefit of integrating retreat practice with life, right? And providing, let's say, an entryway into Dhamma for people, into, you know, meditation for people, and different things like this, and healing relational wounds and so on. But this piece of the Dhamma itself coming alive in experience and entering your life as a fully embodied, felt inquiry, is very beautiful. And I see it happening consistently. This is, basically a three circles of a Venn diagram, right? And that's what I was going to draw, but there's really no need to that. I mean, you get the idea, right? So this tells us, as I conceptualized it in this diagram, to my surprise, it actually helped me and extended my thinking immediately, like as soon as I did it, which is what a good graphic is supposed to do, but usually doesn't, because it showed me the places where, let's say, you have the overlap of, for example, meditative qualities and wisdom, Dhamma, but without the relational. And you say, well, what's going on there? What does the relational bring? And you could ask some questions about that, and it could be productive. Maybe it brings the power of relationship that I was just talking about, or it brings the warmth, or it brings the aliveness, or it brings the integrative qualities that we just suggested. What happens at the intersection of meditative qualities and relationship without the Dhamma? Well, there's plenty of people who are doing work of dyads and being, real focused. Maybe they don't have Vipassana behind it, but they're doing some kind of, practice. And without the Dhamma, it can so easily move into something that there's no reason it wouldn't lead to, let's say, relational greed and trance and pleasure seeking and you know, altered states and so on, because it's powerful. There's no question that it's powerful. But without the Dhamma, where's it going to go? What's the purpose? What's the intention? And if you have the relational qualities and the Dhamma, but not the meditative, you know, you can have a really great, let's say, sutta group, but without the meditative aspect, does it get real? You know, can you really just study and not meditate? Study, even with the power of studying together, you know, what meditation brings to that. And as I said, that, you know, these three bases suggest three areas also to, you know, investigate. What do I need to know, or what do I need to develop to understand the practice, to offer the practice? Have I internalized the Dhamma that I'm going to share? Am I speaking from truth, or am I just trying to convey something kind of like a didactic, you know, like a teacher in a classroom? It's never going to go. To teach inside dialogue, the Dhamma has to be, you know, living in your cell. It doesn't have to be, but it's going to be most powerful when the Dhamma lives in your cells, and you share a contemplation, not only in language, but in tone of voice and quality of presence, that is supporting the meditators to trust and to place their heart on the tip of your words and to go with you into the Dhamma that way. And you could say, well, have I developed the meditative qualities enough to share insight dialogue effectively? Do I feel and understand and experience and live the sati? And of course, when you do, then being with others as you share the practice, you are not only modeling sati, you're effectively transmitting sati. And in the relational development, you know, is there sensitivity? Is there a sense of the group? Is there a sense of individuals? Is there a living compassion in how I am with this? And do I understand something about the evolution of the group, or something about the challenges, the relational challenges that people might have? And that's something that can be developed over time. So that's the framework that I have found helpful, and within the community of people sharing practice and reflecting on it, it's been helpful, and I offer it to you in the hopes that it'll be supportive of your understanding as well. So I'd like to actually let that be a basis now. I'd like to just open the space. I'll go draw the graphics so that we can look at it and think about it. And as a matter of fact, let's just hand this out and you can look at your own. It's just like two, three pages into this book. There you go.
There's a microphone.
So, I'll draw some circles up here just to. Yes.
Is this for questions?
Yeah, that's exactly what I want. That's perfect. Thank you.
So I'm curious to hear, so you shared some of the benefits that people have related to you from doing the Insight Dialogue practice. I'm curious to hear if you've had related to you some of the impacts on an individual's relationship to Sangha or on particular Sangha communities that have, as a whole, benefited from the practice. Mm-hmm. And maybe just personally, how it's transformed over the years, your relationship to refuge.
I would love, Phyllis, would you address that? Because she can, she's got a great example.
Which one are you thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking you have a Sangha and you've been introducing it to your Sangha.
Absolutely. One of the most beautiful things is there are so many Sanghas now. So there's, Greg is thinking about my local Sangha, which is quite lovely. We meet weekly on Wednesday nights, and we have insight dialogue in the large Sangha once a month. But then there's a subgroup, a Kalyanamitta group, who practices offering the guidelines to each other. And then we have, you know, just at least one 3-day local retreat yearly. And what has happened in that community is that people over time really develop a sense of a deeper understanding of the Dhamma. They begin to learn the Dhamma and then embody the Dhamma in their relationships with each other. And so it's and it becomes a basis then for investigating other, like we're doing a lot of racial equity work in our community as well. So it's a basis upon which we then undertake other investigations. Also, I would say the teaching community as a Sangha is perhaps the most vivid experience, because most of us have been together for a long time.
So you mean the people who are teaching Insight Dialogue?
Yeah. And we keep doing things together, and we keep bumping up against each other's personalities and learning from each other's, just the difficulties in relationships. And it's incredible how it has supported having the Dhamma at the center as a framework, and then having a practice has allowed us to kind of learn together, to heal together, to engage in the difficult together, to really be with the unpleasant as well as the pleasant over time, to embrace human vulnerability and imperfection. And it allows us to actually step forward and be able to teach with confidence without this feeling of having to be something other than a human being who's awake. And not that we're awake all the time, but having that shared intention really brightens the mind and provides a reference point on an ongoing basis for awakening. And love, I would say.
Thank you.
I think,
I'm sitting here saying, hello.
The real core of it is that we have really learned how to love each other. And to befriend the world and different cultures, and to know how limited our views are, and to keep learning. So what we did at the end of the retreat here, this is our ethic. We want to know. We want to learn together. No shame in being human, as Rosie remembered. But we want to learn all about the human experience. Yeah.
I'm wondering in the same way, I know that Peace and Dan, and is it Jonathan again?
James.
And maybe there's others are at New York Insight, where there's insight dialogue happening. Are you noticing anything percolating around the practice in your community?
From what I've seen, it's been a really vibrant. We have a weekly evening of insight dialogue practice, and then a monthly evening as well on a different night. And since the weekly group has been added, which I believe is about 2 years ago, I've seen a lot of excitement, as some people have really shifted that evening to their kind of main sangha, and others I've seen kind of excitingly trying to pull others in because they really feel the depth of the practice and the work and are talking about it, you know, often and with a lot of gratitude for the practice. I don't know exactly if this practice, this group shifted that, but I definitely have seen a lot more conversation around with different people, with like a larger subset of people around Dhamma when it's not brought up by anyone else, kind of in other spaces with different members, if that makes sense. And I'm trying to think now. We have a lot of different evenings that are offered and different smaller groups, and I'm thinking about how often it is brought into those spaces. Bart Van Melick, who's a trained Insight Dialogue teacher, he teaches on a few of those nights, and I know has brought the practice not only on that weekly night, but in other spaces. So, and I know some people, and the day longs have been offered, and the word, bless you. The words that I've heard most often is that it was surprising, and I'm trying to think, surprising, something like enjoyable or fun, and a really different way of practicing.
Another piece that I hinted at that kind of falls out of looking at these three bases together, when I was speaking at some point just a little while ago or earlier today, I don't remember anymore, this tenderness It's one of the reasons that that we give a lot of care to in developing, helping people develop to be Insight Dialogue teachers. In particular, what has been mentioned here, Catherine Tuari, the trauma that can be noticed, not caused, but brought forward, even without a retreat container, even without the intensity of retreat, just by the, the intimacy of interpersonal contact. And then if there's even a small degree of mindfulness brought to it and the kind of the way that sparks up the quality of attention, it can be a delicate thing. And all the questions, all the concerns, all the ideas that you were so generously offering earlier today are taken to heart. They're important. One of my hopes is that the Dhamma can provide a reference point that is outside the personal history, and that doesn't solve that doesn't eliminate the challenges that are offered, not just by trauma, but I'm thinking even of less dramatic difficulties. They don't get solved, but when there's a way of understanding, I have seen many times that something becomes approachable, some knot, some binding can become known in a different way when the Dhamma is the lens rather than, let's say, personal memories of difficulty and so on. But it's all to be approached with, respect and care. So Phyllis was just noting that it's 10 to 9. And so just kind of opening to say if there's someone that's, got something cooking that can be brought up, this would be the moment to do that.
This is actually short but full, which is just, these things were just sort of handed out, sort of like, oh, here's some materials. But I am very touched by the obvious care and incredible amount of work. And you've just sort of handed these out. And I'm sort of like going, wow. So I just really want to, we'll get to explore it and stuff like that. But still, I just wanted to note this very completely.
That's very kind, Susie. That means a lot to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This, yeah.
It blew my mind.
So I was actually going to say a little bit about this just as introductory, but over our time together, Over our time together, you know, I think you'll get more familiar with what's in there. I don't want to try and give a whole tour, more to just share the intention, which is to, as it says, just, you know, support you in skillfully offering practice. But also, I'll be frank and say, to give you a sense of the depth of thought that, you know, a community has been investing in this. People who, like yourself, care deeply about the suffering in the world. They care deeply. They respect the Dhamma very deeply. And they offer their hearts, their time, on a, you know, on a freely offered dana basis, and so there's, you know, there's practical stuff in there, a lot of depth offering on the guidelines, some talk about the contemplations, but some of these questions are definitely still, you know, not addressed because there's so many questions to be addressed. This three bases stuff is in there, and there's obviously I don't have the technology for, you can't just double click on it and get a link, you know. However, there are a lot of links in there, if you don't mind typing them in, for talks and other resources. It's a world out there. So welcome to it, you know. Welcome to it. You're actually the first group to get it, even before all the other ID teachers and all the ID facilitators, because it just got made for this event. So, yeah. And it would be good to, you know, also say, this is for you guys. Don't pass it along, please. There were even some people who said, you know, no, this is, you know, you should really not hand this out to people who don't have a sense of responsibility about it. And we are trusting that you have that sense of responsibility. Obviously, this afternoon's conversation was all about care, all about safety. So, may it serve. Yeah. Do you want to close tonight, or? I think that would be great. Yeah. The suggestion was that one of our many loving people would share merit and perhaps metta, and I don't have a sense of who. I mean, obviously, we could easily turn to Bhante, but I... but I don't want to make any assumptions. There's a lot of beauty in this room. So, but it might be a real gift if you would care to close us out for the evening, Ajahn. No obligation. You could just say good night.
To let you know, we'll be extending the invitation in future nights as well.
Mm. sensing internally. Where do I find, how do I find ground? Safety. Something I don't have to work for. May I find that in this embodiment. Quality of restful ground. Sensing this, breathing into this. The breathing, basic rhythm of the body, drawing energy in from the ground, from safety, unforced, no deserving, not earned, given, breathing in the gift. Can I feel more of my body? Can I breathe that quality through more of my body, from my belly, my chest? The boundaries of my body. I sense the space around me, yielding, open. As I breathe in, my body swelling into the space. As I breathe out, space lightly wrapping around me, safe, my space. I reach out, can that quality extend to a space that connects us rather than divides us? A space where we all breathe in, we all breathe out freely, unobstructed. No intrusion. Can the space around me feel free, unobstructed, non-intrusive? Can I let my heart open into that? A gift of that. Blessing of that. Can I sense the heart's need, its eagerness to gently open into the space, to send its love through the space, into the space, feeling safe, loved, breathing it in, breathing it out, uplifted, abundant, rich. Can I meet places where there's a contraction tenderly? Let my heart touch them tenderly. Feel in my body that as much as they will allow, touch them, not asking them to not be there, just to be touched, included, painful. To be included. Not dismissed, not fixed, included. Asking the pain, the contraction, to teach me. Sensitivity, respect, deep love. And even bring to mind, in my own time, the pain, the contraction, defended, I sense anywhere, in others, breathe it, touch it with mercy, with respect. Asking it to teach me. May even the pain, the contraction, offer me maturity. Transform my love to compassion and selflessness. May all beings be free from obstruction, free from intrusion. May all beings find their ground, their ultimate freedom. May their rest in that be refreshed and regenerated from that, to heal, to touch, and to bless.
So we'd like to invite us into noble silence through breakfast, if that's acceptable to you. And if you feel a strong need to talk, maybe find a separate place to do it so that it doesn't disturb others. And I hope you sleep well, and I'll see you tomorrow.